Zina father one time have a zina b'skinta, a zina b'skinta, because zina naizah, that bird, the claim at karsulei b'mayah, which is standing up to its ankles in water. The ratio of and its head was in the sky. We said, well, it must be the water is very shallow, because it was up to its ankles in water, whatever joints it has down there. So we assume that there's not much water beneath the surface of the river or whatever the sea, because it's standing there.
I would assume that it's the head in the sky.
What?
If the head is in the sky, I would assume that it's shallow.
I guess because it was not proportional, or the legs were shorter than what the rest of the body was. That's why. Otherwise, you're right. I know I would assume that. And so, but Ilan Mechas, so he wanted to go down into the water. The Queen Nav should pull up the, in other words, in order to swim. The Navak Baska, the top of the next page now. The Navak Baskala, a voice came out from heaven, V'amar Lon, is a race missing there. And it said to us, Lo Tachisu Lacha, don't go down here. The Naflale Chatzitzo Bar Navro, because a carpenter lost his axe here, he dropped his axe, Shah Shevashnin, 7 years ago, and it didn't fall to the ground. In other words, it's still not reached the bottom of the water in that location. Didn't get to the ground. It's not because there was a lot of water, but because the water was very, literally means fat, but, what? No.
Rapid,
thank you. We're very rapid. Rav Asher said, what is this bird? So who's Ziz Sadaihu? Or it's actually saying that Ziz Shadai. The Chassid, it says, Ziz Shadai Madi. Ziz Shadai, this bird is with me. It goes up all the way to Shemaim. So it's, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, of course, it's a very strange Gemara. So the Ritva says, on this Gemara, he says, and you have the Ritva down here in HaKosev on the previous page. It's not the Ritva always, but in this case it's Maisa Tziparto Karsulai B'maya. You see that? Ten common akoses. Maisa Tziparto Karsulai B'maya. Baruhu Shua Yisroel. It's clear it's going on the Jewish people. Da'ava Gav Iko Shibur Goliath. And even though they're subjugated by the exiles, in other words, by the governments in which they find themselves in exile, they nevertheless involve themselves in learning Torah. And sometimes they want to be happy like the nations among which they find themselves. They want to entertain themselves and find happiness in the same way as those nations. And doesn't work. And then he says, I mashkasi barhuda zishadayu, that actually is for some reason it doesn't bring it down here in our Kosev, at least not that I can see, but the Ritva itself, it says here that you should, what he really means by I'm a mashal, means you should carefully analyze, not what I wrote, but analyze what they said, what does Zishadai mean? So let's talk, what possibly this concept of Zishadai is a very strange bird, right? This bird is represents Klal Yisrael. So we understand the bird represents Klal Yisrael and its head is in heaven, because its head in heaven is the Klal Yisrael's connection to Hashem. You know, in the Hebrew alphabet, there's only one letter which goes up above the line. Even the sound that they're none, right? What's the letter?
Lamed,
right? So the Lamed, actually it's a vav. So the Lamed has this Ziv, a Ziv in Hebrew is a peg. It's a peg which comes out of the top and is connected to Shamayim. Right, that's what I don't know. Many of you heard this from me before, but in the early Hebrew word processes, you guys remember Kambra 64 was before I was born, maybe.
Yeah.
So, They had a lot of trouble. They had a lot of trouble making a Hebrew word processing program which would do a lamed, because there's no letter in English which goes above the line of all the other letters. So what they would do is they would crumple the lamed down like this.
Yeah.
Anybody remember that? So they crumple it in so it fit inside the line, right? I have an early Hebrew word processor program which was written by evangelical Christians. It's called Chiwriter. Very good program, actually. I liked it very much. And the way they did a lamed is the lamed was like this. They let a man look a little bit above the line, and if you wanted to get the rest of it, you had to press Alt L or something like that. Otherwise, you couldn't get the rest of the lamed. Anyway,
you
can
still do it.
What?
You can still do it.
Yeah, they were able to find a way to do it, but not in one shot. It was two different shots.
So it was 4 hour Alt L for like life?
Right. I was getting there.
Oh.
So the Zohar brings down, Zohar brings down this Zohar. It says that this on top of a lamed is a chaf and a vav, right? But the chaf surmounted by a vav. So what is chaf vav?
You
gave up 26, right? And this vav, the Zohar says, it's a migdal parech ba'avir. It is a tower flying through the sky, and it says that there's a princess in the tower, and who's the princess who lives in the tower? Klal Yisrael. Knesset Yisrael lives in this tower over here. So obviously it means that by learning Torah, which the letter Lamed represents Limud, right, learning, so then one connects oneself to the higher realms, right? One connects oneself up to Shemayim, and that's above is always the letter which is the Vav HaChibur. What does Vav HaChibur mean? The Vav which connects. So it's a pipeline which brings down the influence from on high to down below. So, now, in this case also, this bird is, like the lamed, it's anchored in Shemayim. The pshat, I think, is that the legs don't hold it up, because with the legs to hold it up, the water would be much too rapid and wouldn't be able to stand, right? So therefore, what's actually supporting this bird is that the lamed, the top of the head, goes all the way up into heaven. Now, this is very much related, and I think the Ritva is alluding to this, to the name which it has. Ziv means a peg or a hook. Shakai is a name, one name of God. Shin Dalad Yud. You should pronounce it Shakai when it's the name of God. So, but when the learning is also to do with Shaddai, it's fine. So when the name Shin Dalad Yud has two conflicting meanings. Literally it means, the Chazal say it means Sh'amar Lo Lomo Dai. He said to us, for his world, it's enough, right? So this
right.
Shin plus this Dalad Yud, right?
Right.
Sorry?
Like Dayenu.
So the question is, what did he say Dai about? So one Medrash says that he said Dai, the world is already too physical, too material, enough material existence in this world. The other Medrash says there's too much revelation of Hashem's presence in this world. So enough of that. So actually, both, I forget, but I saw this the first time, I think Rabbi Kadai is short, he writes that both Chazal complement each other. In other words, when Hashem made the world, he struck a careful balance, died a sufficient amount of Gashmius versus a sufficient amount of Ruchnius, sufficient amount of material existence versus a sufficient amount of spiritual existence, so there should be a very precise balance. So if somebody wants to find God, he's there. If somebody wants to ignore God, he's also capable of doing it as well. Right? So what happens is that I want to take this step further. In Parshas Va'era, Moshe Rabbeinu is told by Hashem that he to the Avos, to the forefathers, Hashem only revealed himself with the name Shaddai. Right? I revealed myself to them in the name of Shaddai and not in the name of Yirkei Bakke. So Rashi there explains that the name Shaddai means to promise but not to fulfill. In other words, Hashem made promises to the others, but they had trust in Hashem that Hashem would fulfill them even though they themselves did not see the promises coming to fruition. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of Parashat Shmos, he says to God, listen God, you sent me to save the Jews and it ain't happening. Right? I don't trust you. So that's when Hashem gets mad and says, so to speak, and says, you know, The others trusted me. You should trust me too, but since you don't, I'm going to give you a higher level of revelation. Who had their hand up before?
I just want to go back just for a second because I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. When you said mentioned the Chaf and the Vav, you know, which makes those alamas, and you said something about Yud Kei Vav Kei, and I just kind of didn't quite.
Oh, Yud Kei Vav Kei Gematria is 26.
And which is what?
Chaf Vav.
Okay. And what? That's the only connection that you have to do with
him too much? Well, there's a lot of letters in Hebrew, a lot of the critical letters in Aleph Beis are 26.
Okay.
You know that?
No.
And Aleph is also 26. You know that?
No.
Yud, Vav. That's 26, right? Yeah. What else is there?
Mem.
Right. Mem is a Chav with a Vav attached to it.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, what else is there? There must be a few. I'm not sure if that's all. But, in any event, these letters represent some unique lesson which we're supposed to learn from them. Now, Aleph is obvious, right? Who's the one God? You give up it, right? Mem is also obvious in that, you know, Mem represents the mikveh and, you know, coming back to Hashem. We have a mem sof pes, which is a closed letter altogether, right? But like, so that's the mem, and the lamed represents going up, connecting up to Hashem. Yeah.
Maybe you can also say mole, the three letters of 26.
Yeah.
Is mole colored to where
it is? Mole, very good. Yeah.
So, Moshe Rabbeinu, basically,
still there. Oh, well.
So, Moshe Rabbeinu...
Probably cost, I think, $5 or something.
That's what they originally created for anyway.
Yeah.
English
originally. Yeah.
So, basically, Moshe Rabbeinu told Hashem, I don't trust you, and Hashem gets angry at Moshe Rabbeinu, and Hashem says, okay, don't trust me, I'll give you more revelation.
Yeah.
So, can I do that?
No.
So,
Moshe got lucky, you didn't.
Sorry, man.
Yeah. Doesn't work that way for everybody, unfortunately. anyway.
You just happen to be in that minority of people who it doesn't work for.
So that also, Hashem promises, but he doesn't necessarily fulfill his promise in the same generation or to the same person to whom he made the promise, right? Hashem's promises take place over great, vast amounts of time and space. And Hashem carefully calibrates creation, not too much revelation, not too much concealment. So that name, Shakai, is also the name which allows Klai Yisrael, even when they're a state of very strong golus, to retain at the same time the revelation which is sufficient to anchor them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they retain at the time of darkness the trust and Hashem's promise that Hashem is going to someday come back and redeem them, right? As we say, "Lahagi baboker chazecha v'emunos chabalelos." We trust. Yes.
So Yitzchak is the higher revelation. Shaddai is being the lower revelation. We are trusting Hashem, so we should be going by the name of Shakai rather than Yitzchak.
What do you mean? We are. That's to say, this is the name Shakai here.
So. Basically, Klaus, every time we dive into Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, we should be dive.
Hey, what letters are on the tefillin? Shin, right? The shin on top there, right? Where's the dalet?
On the back.
Back. Uh-huh. Where's the yud?
On the arm.
Arm, right? That's it, right?
So why do you always say Yud Kei Vav Kei and everything?
When was the last time you said Yud Kei Vav Kei?
Well, you know what I mean.
The name we use, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, is a variation on the same theme. It's not the same thing as Yud Kei Vav Kei. If anything, Shakai is a higher name than Aleph Dalet Nun Yud.
So why don't we use Shakai?
What?
Why don't we say Baruch Hashem, Baruch Atash, Shakai?
That's one of the attributes.
Because I'm not sure why Chazal, that must be a Lacha Mashmisin, I assume. But somehow the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, which appears all over, the Mesorah is to pronounce it as Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, and not as Shin Dalet Yud.
Okay.
basically because I think our Dalun Yud expresses our concept of Hashem's mastery in the present. Whereas Shin Dal Yud is some sort of promise, which of course we believe in, but it's not our present experience.
But all the things we learn about Hashgafa...
Listen, the name of Shakai appears plenty, right? The mezuzah? Remember the mezuzah?
I remember.
Yeah, so what does it say on the mezuzah?
What?
Shakai?
Yeah. Why? Because what do they say it represents?
Shomer
Daltos Yisrael. Now, it doesn't really mean that, but it's cute, right? God watches the doors of Israel. So that's Rosh Tevos, Shin Dalet Yud, right? So the idea is that this name, Shakai, limits negative things happening to the Jews. Balances the difficulty with protection.
So, since there is no Vav Hei, we just have the... You have the Yud Hei, we have the Yud Hei, we don't have the Vav Hei, right?
Yeah.
So, what do you should come up to?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Okay, after all said and done, I can't
say
for sure.
It's enough.
Right. But I think that... I think the word Adon is much more easier for us to relate to. Shaddai is kind of like a obscure type of name. You have to sit here and analyze it for a while to come up with some explanation. Say God is your master, that's immediate. You understand what that means pretty quickly. I think that's probably part of it. You still don't like it. Okay, whatever. Yeah.
What's the shortage of the word
Shaddai? Sha'amar lo lomo dai. It's a contraction. Sha'amar lo lomo dai. He said to the world enough.
Oh, the world froze over?
What's that?
Land froze over? Like
the race
you? Yeah, stop expanding. Stop expanding physically and spiritually. Yeah.
Is that when Hashem in the Parts Great should say, be insane? So, yeah. What's the one he says, and it was good or death enough? The, oh, Kiko. When he says Kiko, is that...
It could be related to this, right? The, it says, there's a pasuk, I forget where the pasuk is, it says, Barikosi lechon bracha ad bli dai. So, clearly that there is some relationship between the ketob and the bracha. But yeah.
The word dai in Hebrew, isn't it a slang word?
No.
Or it's actually very ancient?
It's actually very ancient. Have you ever seen Dayenu? Yeah, so that's that word. Yeah. There's a difference between dai and must speak. Right? Must speak means, I have, okay, it's enough, but I have enough. Die means stop, right? So it's like arrest something. It's in mid-air, in mid-progress. It's not really enough, but it's got to stop here.
How about Hamaspeak?
What?
Hamaspeak.
Hamaspeak?
That play from the...
that's a different category, yeah. So that they're supposed to give Hamaspeak to other people. Anyway... So they saw this the big bird, which represents Klal Yisrael, and they wanted to go down to cool themselves in the water, which is the water of Lagoyt the Ritva, the water of Golus. Now, like I mentioned several times, you can actually explain this in many, many different ways. They want to, the way the Eitz Yosef learns it, he's on the bottom of the page, right? So he says that it's talking about the two levels of Torah. In other words, there's Torah which is heavenly, which is Kabbalah, and then there's Torah which is simple or revealed, the revealed Torah, Nisra versus Nigla. And he says that people think that Nigla is no big deal, right? And that's why they want to learn lots of Nisra. So you should know that Nigla is a very big deal. It might be shallow, but it's very rapid. In other words, it's not so simple to actually conquer even the world of Shas. Right? Don't think you have to jump to Kabbalah. Shas is pretty difficult itself. But all of these Mishraim can be interpreted in many ways. The Ritva happens to interpret it in terms of Golos because that's its consistent approach throughout these goddesses. But you can come up with something yourself. You know, the Ramban, in his famous dispute in Barcelona, said that, I mentioned this before we started, that in Judaism, the only thing which is, in the Talmud, the only thing which is really binding is halacha. HaKadosh is not binding. Right? Why is that? Because Haggadah, you can say anything you want. Right? You can really say any interpretation you want. And you don't even know if your interpretation is the one, of course, that the original founder and Mora had in mind. But if it's a good mashal, it works for lots of stuff. Okay, so therefore, there's just one approach, and we have many different approaches. So he says, it says according to the Ritva, that they wanted to go down and enjoy the Golos where they found themselves, right? And a Basco came out. Now, a Basco is an interesting concept. Basco literally means an echo. The daughter of a voice. So it means like when a voice reverberates on something, that's a Basco, right? So the Basco here obviously means a voice coming out from Shamayim, but whenever we have a Basco, the question is whether it's an actual literal voice or whether it is something which happens internally within the human being. The Baal Shem Tov is very big on saying that Baskols are not something where, you know, there's a loudspeaker up in heaven and you hear the Lord's voice come down. Right? He said that this is something which is heard internally.
Aww.
So that people who experience a Baskol are getting an internal message. It's not a prophecy, because a prophecy is a vision, right? So this is not a prophecy, but it is something less than that. And he says the many of the Hasidic Sfarim say that everybody gets Baskols all the time, the Piyatetzer says. You get them all the time. It's just that you think it's indigestion. You don't know exactly what you're hearing because you don't have the proper training to know what you're hearing. So therefore, you think that, you know, you have to go to the psychiatrist because it's not something strange, but actually that's what it's about. All this Jewish guilt and tension and anxiety, it's all because everybody's hearing all these bas calls all the time. Everybody's hearing these voices and they don't know what to do with it. Yeah.
Do you mean like the voice of the coach, you know, like don't drive fast and you drive fast and get in a car accident or something like that, or is it?
Well, these voices would be more, that could be a Basco, but these are probably more profound. In other words, these are saying things like, do tshuva, right? Or, don't be a jerk, you know, things like that.
Only when you're awake, or could be when you sleep?
I guess, it probably can only even be when you sleep, I know it's different.
Not allowed to be a
jerk? What?
Not allowed to be a jerk?
Well, it's a chassidus thing, you know, if you want to be a very pious person, then you try to avoid being a jerk. Yeah.
What is it simpler, unless a rabbi sounds... I think just thought of like what another idea, a simpler explanation perhaps would be that it's just the art of neshama. In other words, if it's not very profound, but it's just like, you know, don't say lashon hara, do something good, or don't do something bad. Wouldn't that be like our yitzer tov, or something within us, the authority within us?
Yep.
Counterbalance to the
Tahara. Right, but this seems like it comes from beyond. In other words, a Basco, yes, of course the person has an internal conscience, right? But a Basco is something which comes from beyond that. In other words, and for example, we find, and this is would be extreme, an extreme case, right? There's a Basco which came out in the Yavne, where the Sanhedrin was the Yavne, said, Halacha like Beis Hillel. So, again, how did that happen? Was that a voice which came down, you know, from the boom box? Or was that an inner realization that Beis Hillel must be right, right? Or perhaps, according to you, I guess you could say, well, it was a logical conclusion which they reached. I'm not sure I'm happy with that.
Really something profound that's like beyond what would be reasonable, you know,
conscious thought. Yeah.
I mean, more than just, oh, don't do the bad things.
Yeah. See, in Judaism, we say, well, I should say in mysticism, we say that your subconscious is, or your unconscious as well, are both taps into the higher levels of your neshama, that in essence can be prophetic in and of itself. And it can have this profound insight from time to time, which it kind of shoots out.
Bosco and Ruach Kodesh, is that interrelated?
No, because Ruach Kodesh is that you sense a divine message or assistance of what you're doing. You know, in other words, Ruach HaKodesh, let's say what says Rashi was in, the Baal Shem Tov said all Sfarim, I don't know what this means, but probably not all Sfarim, but he said all Sfarim into the Maharsha were written by Ruach HaKodesh, right? So it means that they were written with divine inspiration, but there was no specific message involved in that, right? There was a profound inspiration which this person enjoyed. And that person might not even realize that he was getting this inspiration. But we look back and we see that this inspiration was involved in that. That's what I'm saying. Baskol is a specific message. And it's not an inspiration, but rather a specific message which a person receives.
So it's the same as earlier, Rabbi Ezra in the stages, when they said, oh, the halakha is like Rabbi Ezra, the Baskol came out, said the same thing, like, they all realized that Rabbi, I mean, you know, like if they were arguing with Rabbi Ezra, then...
They all realized
why, that... Why would they say the halakha is like Rabbi Ezra, but go to the Torah of the Shemayim?
No, that's the point. In other words, they would feel that if halakha was based purely on a person's level, you know, vis-a-vis Hashem, where he's holding in his kedusha or in his havodas Hashem, so their halacha would be like Rabbi Eliezer. But that's not what determines halacha. That's what they're saying.
Right.
Well, determines halacha is the majority of stages, whether they are in that madrega or not in that madrega.
Right.
No, I think they're obviously the basketball, so they came from heaven. The answer will be Shemayim.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily came from. You mean as opposed to what?
An internal...
No, it can be internal. There's an internal message. The Baal Shem Tov says it about... Baal Shem Tov specifically goes on the Mishnah. The end of all those.
Well, it's
the case of the Gemara that's
like the
base
of Medrash Shoh. That same case. It's internal, though. What? Isn't the same example of the Gemara, like somebody said something and the whole
base
of the Shoh tried it. So it's like a sign from heaven.
Well, why is that followed that the Baskol was from, the Baskol could be from heaven but still be internal. But I'll tell you, the Baal Shem Tov says it on this Mishnah.
The
Beis Medrash Shaking? Yeah, the Beis Medrash was a separate stage. It was just separate stages in Rabbi Eliezer's proof. One second. It says here. Yeah, in Avos, Perek Vav, Mishnah Beis. Rabbi Shimon Levi said, every single day, a heavenly voice emanates from Mount Korev, proclaiming and saying, woe to them to the people because of their insult to the Torah. And that, he says, it's not a real voice. There's no loudspeaker at Har Sinai, you know, declaring this. This comes into people's hearts. That's about Shem Levi's mission. So he could say very easily the same thing about the Baskol and Kitz Rabbi Eliezer, right?
If all the people would say something more lofty, then, you know, he would come out and say Baskol could, you know, but he doesn't say it that way. He's actually, you know,
right. He knows this is more cautious.
Yeah, all loud.
I remember reading somewhere that when a Baskol would come to someone in a dream or when they wake up, they would think they heard something. And they would say, Anani, no, come over here, hello, Rabbi, when he came to his rabbi, he said, Anani.
No.
He said, not the same
thing. No, that was with Shmuel. Shmuel, when he first became a prophet, he thought that when he heard God speak to him, he thought Eli was speaking to him. Eli the Kohen, who was his mentor. So it's talking about actual prophecy. This was a prophetic encounter with Hashem. It's just that being a young child, he didn't differentiate between Hashem and Eli. He required more work in order to make that differentiation.
He couldn't tell because he was young.
Yeah. Okay. Generally speaking, yeah, let me make that point clear. To be a Navi, usually we assume requires lots and lots of work. Here at Baskol, it doesn't seem requires that amount of work, because it's not a revelation in the same sense, it's getting a message. Okay, so this Baskol came out and said, Lo techusu lacha. So, you know, if you want to darshan this along the lines of the Ritva, so you say that Jews are supposed to have an internal voice which tells them, you can't be the same. In other words, you want to assimilate, right? You want to go swim in the same waters? You can't do it, right? You're different than they are. So therefore, you have to remain somewhat separate. So that's why, and since that's what the Ritva says, the Ritva specifically mentions Gil Ba'akil Ka'amin, non-Jewish entertainment, right? Al-Tis Machusel Gil Ka'amin is the pasuk which teaches us that you're not supposed to listen to music of the non-Jews. So this actually is the in Kitten above that, right? So this actually, Marshaw is particularly concerned about the entertainment issue,
no,
right? I mean the Ritva, not the Marshaw. What?
You can listen to rap.
You can't listen to rap. Why would you be allowed to listen to rap? I'm not sure exactly about Matisyahu.
What do you mean you're not sure? What do you mean, Rabbi? What do you mean you're not sure?
What if you make
the music
yourself?
What?
What if you make the music yourself?
And you're good.
Doesn't matter. Good.
How about
all the
music that came from Russia? All those marches, whatever.
Oh, come on, we must have spoken about music.
No.
Oh, man.
It's more about the melody.
Yeah, right. So, didn't I say him to say it recently?
Oh. No.
How about techno?
Listen, guys.
This is the way
it is. It's not actually the lyrics which are the problem with non-Jewish music. It's the melody.
The lyrics
are not. Not the script either.
I'm
telling you, the moral problem in the lyrics is the melody, because the difference between classical music and contemporary music, to a large extent, is that classical music is meant to evoke the higher emotions and moods which a human being experiences. Wagner also.
Like Mozart? Yeah. I mean, in the same sense, it could be channeled.
It's militaristic.
Right.
But that's also, that's considered to be a higher emotion. The military prowess was always considered to be a great achievement by humanity. You're going way beyond my area of expertise here. let's limit ourselves to things that are general principles. On the other hand, most rock music is meant to bring out the animalistic tendencies of the human being, and it's meant to evoke moods and emotions which are animalistic, sexual, violent, etc., etc.
War. I mean, if you're playing a guy who wrote music that was used by the Nazis in order to put people in the oven.
It's organized music. It's like
marching music. Marching music has like slightly different. But I'm saying you could take that kind of thing. That's a very animalistic side too. It could be used for, just like a certain song could be used to elevate you and used for positive emotion. A rock song could also.
You might be right. I'm not saying I can't.
Romantic music is kind of slow and relaxing. You know, you get something, you get to very concentrated. But sometimes. Used for something else.
I think for the most part not. In any event, listen, Rav Eitai, if you don't want to hear what I say, there's no way I'm going to ever convince you of this. So you have to approach this with an open mind and understand what I'm saying. Then you can disagree if you want. Okay? The bottom line is that even when you take a non-Jewish song and you put Jewish words to it, like Mordechai Ben David does, that's no good either. In other words, Mordechai Ben David took a song, for example, about Genghis Khan, right? Everybody knows this, right?
What's the Genghis Khan song?
Yidden. You know Yidden? Anybody know it? You guys never heard that one?
No.
Okay, so next time you buy an internet-capable computer, look up Chinggis Khan, actually, because it's by a German rock group. It was a Eurovision entry in the 1978... What? I think 19...
I heard that one.
1978 Eurovision.
The funny dance.
It's
part of them, right?
What's the problem with it? So you have to watch how people dance when they play it. When they play it at weddings.
Yeah.
When they play at weddings,
that's
Jewish weddings,
yeah.
People dance in a very, very animalistic way when they do it. Yes. Yes.
What about those...
Because you can't dance a regular dance to it. It doesn't actually fit with the regular dance. It has to be some sort of...
The
Yeshiva Shuffle. Right.
I
he's helpful.
What?
Yeah.
What for he has in the
it's kind of like, you know, when you hear a song, you know, walk like a Sonic.
I was telling people,
Sonic don't walk like this.
He asked me what's different about a Jewish wedding. I said, oh, men and women dance separately. I was standing next to this guy, hotel worker, and we started watching everyone watch, and this guy looked at it and goes, wow, except for the men and women being separate, it's a Polish wedding. It is exactly like a Polish wedding. Dancing is the exact same. So,
what's one of the Polish wedding?
Huh?
They probably pay traditional Polish marches.
Not necessarily, but, you think regular dancing, all it is.
Non-animalistic dance, non-animalistic dance, where Prince still does make all sorts of crazy, lewd motions with his body.
Mosh pit style.
I think you can do it better than I can. What? Of course he knows. What? Of course he knows. What do you, how do you think he got the nigger? What? It's not a look. It's you have to have the sensitivity, though, to know that you can't be, there's certain things you can't be macho. Now, take, on the other hand, you take the Marseillaise, the French national anthem, which Lubavitch adopted. So that's very nice melody. It's a very stirring melody. It's a march, and it's a...
But that's Napoleon March.
What?
Napoleon March.
What? Napoleon March. Precedes Napoleon.
Huh?
Precedes Napoleon.
No, but they have a Negan also. Napoleon March.
It could be. I'm not familiar with.
I thought the point, like, hit me with your best shot to take and make variations of the English.
Hit me with
the
silent
very bad.
Yeah,
of course it's bad. Wait a minute. Okay, so it's not a built stone. It's not built. That's jazz. I think jazz is different than rock. I think jazz is okay. I don't think jazz actually has the same connotation as rock music.
For sure it doesn't. Yeah. For sure it doesn't.
Chill, man.
People don't dance to jazz either.
Right. How about the flying music? Is that cool?
No. I have no idea what it is.
That doesn't do with any odd
variations.
I think flying
music. No.
Yo, man. Chapter 1.
You lucked me a while ago.
Alright, how about a techno song with Hebrew lyrics?
I don't, what is the techno song?
That's actually really good.
I don't think that's good. But they go off, it's like a good deal.
So sounds right.
What?
Sounds right.
No, it's listening to like the Hebrew radio station out here. It's all this sort of Jewish music. It's all in a techno beat.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. The, you know what it is? Because since we are so not assimilated but acculturated, so therefore we feel a need to have this kind of music. So therefore it's probably somewhat better to have it with Jewish lyrics than have with secular lyrics.
So
but it's not ideal.
No, people can take music on its own. Most people don't like it on its own. But for some reason, that Hebrew soundtrack to it, they were fine with it.
What about the songs that you can't really dance to, but you could just listen to it?
Like jazz?
What about jazz?
No, like even the Beatles. There are some songs you just can't dance to. So
you too?
The Beatles.
The Beatles. You have to figure out yourself.
I have a question, actually. You said that Zuna Gon said to learn Torah.
You can dance to those songs.
Gypsy
of course.
So maybe it's really big
in
Israel.
And the Greek dancing?
So that's actually my opinion, not actually what people do today, right? And I don't even ask you my opinion. I'll give you my opinion. But that's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily jive with what's going on out there. No, it's not good. It's not worth it. But that's the problem. The problem is really the emotions which it arouses. It's not the passions which the music arouses. The lyrics are secondary in their impact. As a matter of fact, their impact is very, very small. Yeah, but it's only going to, if you read suggestive lyrics in a monotone, they're not going to be particularly, you know, stirring and passionate. Yes.
It's actually more funny
yes.
to make it
that
way.
So, that, you know.
Let me break it down to your whole point. Come this way,
right.
Not every day.
So it doesn't work the same way. What?
That is meant to like stir up emotions, but usually for a good thing. They're like music; they can stir up emotions, but they're supposed to be like to inspire you.
Well, that's good.
Like if there's kind of a certain rock, like my rock.
Are you cool about alternative rock?
Like,
what do you think about Matisyahu?
That's the thing. The one time I listened to Matisyahu, he seemed kind of part of a, neutral.
Oh, nice.
He didn't seem to be particularly animalistic. He seemed to be kind of weird, but not particularly animalistic.
Disco
music animalistic? Yes, you watched it. Disco music is definitely animalistic. But by the way, my whole knowledge of secular music comes from 2 years of riding on a school bus when I was in high school. So my awareness of rock extends and basically limited to the Bee Gees.
I was just going to make a joke about the Bee Gees.
Wow. You're stuck with the Bee Gees.
Unbelievable.
For 2 years.
Oh, wow. That's something else. They were like the biggest hit, though.
Yeah.
Wow. You're not good with the Bee Gees, then. You're not good.
No. So back then, whoever listened to the Bee Gees was like off the Derek Bee Gees.
I guess so. I mean, it's not a day they've been quite tame.
Exactly.
What?
Moti
Shabbos Fever, right? That was a hot movie. Yes. going back to the Ritva.
I've also all sorts of tunes going through my
Okay, so the Ritva says that the issue is not so much assimilating religiously, but accepting their forms of entertainment. You know, the Chazal speak very strenuously against theaters and circuses.
Oh, right.
Now,
that was Torah, though, right?
What?
Was that mentioned in Torah?
Theaters and circuses.
No.
Typically, no.
Yeah.
But the question is, what exactly the heck is for us to go to theaters and circuses?
No.
The
Phantom
of
the Opera?
What?
That's no deal?
So I think probably that their theaters and circuses were more on the wild side than necessarily our circuses today.
No, concerts are incredibly... Just like that, I'm sure.
Right, rock concerts probably.
Oh, hell, Ringling Brothers.
Is that cool?
He just said circuses. You're like, what about
Ringling Brothers? No, but see, he thinks
it was
different
back then. Yeah, if you like the lion jumping in the fire.
Yeah.
The problem is that the women are very scantily dressed.
Wow, the Ringling Brothers is a problem then.
That's the problem with Brooklyn Zulu.
Right.
They have petty songs.
That's fine. They have before. They run slaves.
The
music in this now.
You know, they actually do have kosher circuses. They do the Chol HaMoed, and some people sometimes they put on kosher circus shows. Well, I don't know if they have it from people, but I guess they cover the girls up.
Isn't there one that allotted you buy tickets for
and then they canceled it.
And said you couldn't go to it.
Yeah, yeah. I think they canceled it. But I heard the reason they actually canceled is because it was going to lose money. So I'm not sure that actually is.
Well, What, he canceled the cancellation?
They canceled the circus. They canceled the circus.
Because why?
I think they didn't sell enough tickets. I think that was actually the issue.
So they hired Yahoo to tell us?
No. Just give him Matthew Seale.
Send us a message.
That's the first episode message.
I remember wanting to say.
That sounds very fishy. I don't want to see that.
I was I taught for a couple of years at Kushner Yeshiva High School in New Jersey. Kushner Yeshiva is the word yeshiva does not fit in that phrase by any stretch of the imagination. So the
Kushner,
what?
Kushner.
Kushner. What? Officially.
It's a state school, Monroe State School.
So, Monroe State High School. They brought Blue Fringe to play a concert. Blue Fringe is one of the
death metal.
It's a Jewish group. It was a terrible problem. So you had all the girls running up front and dancing.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
The way they were
dancing was not the way the Benosi throw usually
dances.
So you can see that people think that just because people with the yarmulkes sing songs and their songs which have something to do with Judaism that's okay. It's certainly not okay. Okay?
Okay.
Now, the,
that was family culture music. Mm-hmm.
So that's what he means by culturation, right?
Right.
Culture.
Yes. The girl kind of said that the gospel came out and said, don't go down here, because an axe fell down here. Carpenter dropped his axe, and 7 years it hasn't gotten to the ground. So that according to Atheosis chat, the axe is like the tool with which you analyze a sugya, right? So therefore, in fact, the Talmid Chacham are called very often the word nagarim, carpenters, because they build up sugyas. So therefore, it says that it's not so simple what you think is very simple, because it takes a lot of time to understand what's going on in Shas and regular Lumdus without getting into any mystical esoteric stuff. But according to the Pshat which the Witzer is going with, so it means that a person as little as he's involved in something that can just sweep him away. In other words, you can say, well, I only get involved in one aspect, right? And that one aspect is a small part of my life. Right? But it doesn't necessarily work out that way. Ultimately, anything which you're involved with, which is of a negative aspect, can have a powerful influence on you. So here, we say that, even if you think you're very strong, like a carpenter wielding the axe, nevertheless, the water is very shallow, nevertheless, since the water can be very swift and very powerful, so then it can just sweep you away. And the only way it doesn't sweep you away is if you have this anchor in Shemayim, getting back to the bird itself. The bird itself is pegged into Shemayim. That's why it has the capacity to stand there. So if the moment you drop something, everything is lost. The only way you can retain, stand in any way, shape, or form, is if you're anchored. So that's why I think the mushroom here is that this guy dropped something, even though he dropped something very heavy, right, an axe, a heavy, dense thing. It just keeps going with the flow and doesn't get down to the ground, and it's not grounded and it's not sustained. The only way to sustain itself in such a place is to be anchored in Shamayim, and that anchor in learning Torah and doing mitzvahs and all that is what gives the person the capacity to withstand this powerful current. Right, the person is like a ladder going up to Shamayim. That's right. What? The Ritva doesn't actually say what he doesn't give a shot in the axe. I assume that the axe means something heavy which you expect would fall.
Wouldn't you incorporate axe like, I don't know, death?
Go ahead, try it.
No, the axe is falling.
Yeah, no.
What about the 7 years?
Oh, right. That, so it says that seven didn't get to the ground even though 7 years have passed. Over the 7 years are like a cycle, right? So it's the Shemitah cycle. And after 7 years also, although it's not the little peg to Shemitah, but in this an Eved Ivri works for 6 years and then he goes free. Right? So you think that, that's a time in which things can be resolved and you can overcome the difficulties which you face. No, once you fall in, you fall in, and there is no limit to how much you're enslaved in that. Unlike an Eved Ivri who gets out after 6 years, you're stuck. Right? You're not going to be able to get out. Okay, but I think we'll stop here for tonight. That was one of Gadika. We'll go on with the next one next week. Give me back the pages. So the one I was saying next week. Okay.